Spirit Radio Podcasts.
This morning, the Leaving Cert online portal opens for students to formally register their choice for whether they're doing upcoming written exams or accredited grades, or indeed both. On the line to tell us a little bit more about how it's all going to work and just give advice as well for Leaving Cert students at this time, we have Midlands-based guidance counsellor Betty McLaughlin on the line. So good morning to you, Betty.
Good
how are you?
Good morning, how are you doing? It is another little job for Leaving Cert this morning who wish to apply to the CAO and who want to obviously apply as well for their exams. They now have to go on portal. They have to open an account and they literally register on examinations.ie. And the Leaving Certs are now in school, so they're huge support. At least they're not distance learning like they were this time last year when they had to make the account. So that's an improvement. So what will they need for that? They'll need their Leaving Cert number, which they will get from their school. They'll need a mobile contact number and their PPS number. And then they will go in and they will be asked to check. They're already, the school will have transferred to the department the subjects that they have registered for. But they really need to read through those to check carefully that all the subjects they are doing are there. And in the case of some students who might be doing a subject outside of school, to make sure that that's on the list as well. And then they can edit that themselves. They will be asked as well at this stage, do they want to go for the CIPI exam, go for the predicted accredited grades, as they're now calling them, or whether they want to do both. I would advise that they definitely do both, because it's very early for them to think, and they will still have an opportunity late March or early April, again, to go back in then and confirm have they made.
Yeah, because presumably, Betty, it could be a case for some students who are just settling back into, you know, in-person education, that they can go, do you know what, actually, with this particular subject, it's going better than I thought, or I'm a bit more behind than I thought. Yeah.
Totally winning. And I would say as well, like, you know, think about it. You're going to, if you sit the exam and you also opt for the accredited grade, you have two chances. It's like being in a competition. I have a better chance if I have two tickets than I have one. And by opting for the accredited grades, if they worry about doing worse when they do sit the exam than the accredited grade, that won't matter, because they will be given the benefit and they will be given the better of the two. So it really is worth considering to, you know, both options that are available there are two very good options. And as well as that, in taking the papers this year, there are less questions to be answered. They have been slimmed down in, you know, and yet they're given the same amount of time to complete those papers. So I think that's a very good nod to the recognition and understanding in the department of the difficulties and the challenges of the online learning for those students.
Yeah, and the time that's been missed. What about, Betty, just the decisions that are being made for written exams and predicted grades on the upcoming oral exams? Are students being urged to make that decision now in terms of the orals?
Well, in terms of the orals, if they're going, the orals are the orals that will be you know, recorded in school, for example, that will only be marked, that is actually sent to the department, to the State Exams Commission, and that will be marked in by the State Exams Commission. Somebody will listen to all those orals and will mark them. So it won't form part of the accredited grade system, the mark allocated for that. It will only come into play if they actually decide to sit the exam. So that's another reason why students should give good consideration. Students who may not be very good at the written can often be very, very good orally and present themselves well. It gives them another way of you know, giving another opportunity for them to show evidence of their learning. And so, yes, it will affect, of course, if they don't take the written exam, the oral is not accounted for then.
Okay, and what about, Betty, just, you know, usually you can decide if you're going to do the higher level or the ordinary level exam very close to the day of the exam. Is that going to remain the same, or will it be different this year?
For the moment, it will be different this year. It's my understanding that late April, you know, early May, when they make their final, when they get given their final chance, or late March, April, when they're given their final chance to check their subjects, they will have to make the decision then whether it's higher or ordinary. But like, they can talk to their teachers about that and decide, you know, at this stage of the game, there's not that many weeks left. do I feel more comfortable sitting the higher or the ordinary level? And the, you see, the accredited grades will have gone in to the department from the teachers before they sit the exam and before the exams are marked. So therefore, they have to make that decision for the accredited grade, because the teacher has to decide, you know, am I marking them on at the higher level paper or on the lower level? So for that reason, this year, yes, they have to make that decision. But to be honest, Wendy, usually many, many years, most, you know, you'd find 75% of 80% even of students and more would have known what level they were taking at that stage.
Yeah, and as you say, talking to your teacher is probably the best thing to do. Speaking of that, there's been, thankfully, teachers and students back in the classroom last week. What's been the reaction so far that you've seen from students and teachers, Betty?
Students are delighted to be back. They're delighted with the support of their peers and their colleagues. And, you know, they really, no more than in September when students returned and it was reported widespread that they were never happier once they did get back to school. So, of course, that support system, that connection, you know, that face-to-face, it is the quality learning and teaching and learning, really. And students are happy to be back and they're happy to have clarification around what their options are. And really, they have generous options, you know, and they've every reason to be optimistic.
Yeah, and in terms of that, focusing on that optimism, because particularly for Leaving Cert students, Betty, it has been a very challenging year for them in terms of the lockdowns. And what's your final advice for them just in the final weeks to just be able to get the most out of what's left of the school term?
Yeah, absolutely, to work with their teachers. And they will be asked if they're in relation to accredited grades. They will have some exams coming up, to be well prepared for those. They will have three assessments in each subject, so that the teachers will have that data to draw on to make a good judgment on what accredited grade. So work with your teachers. Don't be afraid to ask for help, you know, and advice, because that's the advantage of being there on hand in school where they can. And, you know, their guidance counsellor is there as well if they have any personal issues or anxieties around it. There is a great support service in schools. Once you're there on the ground, you're in the best place.
Yeah, and reach out and seek that support. Just to ask you, Betty, I think maybe for students that we're seeing stories this week about just the record number of CAO applications, yes, and this reality that, like, how much will points go up and will I get my course that I've already worked so hard for? What's the kind of reassurance you have for students who are feeling anxious about it all?
Yeah, well, my reassurance there is that there have been a minimum of 5,000 extra courses put into the system. I know that the Minister for Higher Education, Simon Harris, is working with the Higher Education Authority and looking at how best can we accommodate the extra applicants that have applied, and bearing in mind as well that, you know, even if the points go up for some, they'll go up for all. You know, like it's year to year the way the points work out. And I would say apply. When you can, research your course, think about what subjects excite you and that you do best in, and look at what course is out there for you that you can really do further studies in those subjects, and also bear in mind the type of work that you would be doing and what's available in the labour market for the graduates of those courses. What are those graduate destinations?
Well, great advice as always, Betty. Thanks so much for joining us on the programme today. That was Guidance Counsellor and former President of the Institute of Guidance Counsellors, Betty McLaughlin. Spirit. In some ways it might feel like a lifetime. In another way, it might be hard to believe that we're going to mark a year since the first COVID-19 shutdown kicked in with the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar at that time, closing all schools and colleges on the 12th of March. And for my next guest, St Patrick's Day was perhaps an even bigger milestone, because that was actually the last time he was able to hold an unrestricted service in his church. With me to look back on this last year and how the pandemic has impacted the faithful and also some of the positives and how we look forward to the future, I have Baden Stanley, who's rector at Christ Church in Bray in County Wicklow. Baden, thanks for joining us today.
No problem at all, Wendy. Great.
Well, does it feel like a year to you, or what's the year been like?
Isn't it really strange? Like, it's like it's gone on for 10 years, and yet it's like a blink of an eye. I think time has done such a different thing with our minds, because every day drags out. And yes, when the rhythm of it means that you look back and you realise we're in March already, it's 12 months nearly to the day since that announcement, and how much has changed and how much has been tough, you know.
And in terms of just looking back on last year, because I'm going to play just a short clip, because you were chatting then to Ronan Johnson about the St. Patrick's Day service. Have a listen.
We just felt we needed to do something to finish and to close that part of our community. Yeah. And we had an amazing sort of Patrick's Day ceremony where the choir actually finished with the Old Irish Blessing, in, which was sung, and John Morris led them in this. And
wow.
It was one of those moments, and people were just very moved by it. Where,
oh, yeah.
I was kind of saying, until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand.
Yeah,
you know?
Beautiful. Wow, that's hair standing up on the back
I
of your
know.
Arm and stuff.
Yeah.
Probably at that time, Baden, it was this kind of closure in one way, but you probably didn't think, or did you, that it was going to be a year later and we'd still be having the same conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, we knew the 2 week thing was never really all it was going to be, but we all kind of thought by summer, then by autumn, and, you know, it just seemed to keep surging again, and just the adaptability that was needed, I think, in the last 12 months has been phenomenal. I mean, we've moved from being congregations gathering in our different churches, having tea and coffee as part of that, or chats with our fellow worshippers, to this online thing where you can sit on your bed in your dressing gown and you can watch somebody performing, and I mean that in the right sense of the word, but performing a liturgy or a service. And, you know, the whole concept of being church changed almost overnight, because we suddenly started looking around and saying, right, what do we do with this? how do we meet this? How do we deal with this, you know?
And how have you found it, just in terms of having to adapt, and those who are connected to your church? Have you been able to keep some sense of community together?
Yeah, I think one of the hugely important parts of the last 12 months for churches has been this word connection or belonging. And I think some things we've got disastrously wrong, and there's a few recordings of services that other people never saw again, but some things we seem to manage to get, like that sense of people being engaged and connected. And I think that's been really important. I think what we've found in our community is people and families who mightn't have come every week or even every month to church started connecting because everything was so uncertain. They were looking for some sort of connection point. And so, you know, like, we're reconnecting with families, you know, that maybe might only come out once or twice a year. And they're just appreciating the fact that little things we've done, like we did a Mother's Day delivery of flowers to most homes, and we've done kind of several similar things through the year, just to say to people, look, you're not forgotten. Even though we can't see you, we're still there for you, and we're still there with you. And I think that's been building that sense of community right up to, you know, the anniversary of it all starting off.
And what about for your younger members? You know, for some of them it might be bizarre in a way that the last time you saw them they might have been children, now they're young adults, they've grown. They've changed.
That's right. And you see also, but the thing with children and young people change, but also when you meet them, even if you're out in your walk, they've got masks on, so their hair is longer, everything's different, so it's very hard sometimes to recognise. And that connection with all ages is hugely important. And to be honest, it's something we haven't yet really got quite right in our own community, because we have in terms of the worship and the connection on a Sunday, but in terms of connecting, like, and during the week and keeping in touch, that's been probably a lot harder, because, you know, when you're online in school, and then as we all know, Zoom meetings, etc., are exhausting, and they drain you more than conversation. So finding those points of connection with all ages is harder. We've done quite a few fun things with children's sermons and things like that. But in terms of actually having that relationship connection, and I think that's something we're going to miss big time. I'm not saying young people won't come back, but I think they'll have changed. They'll have been through a lot that we haven't been necessarily part of in that journey. And that's something we need to prioritise. Like, you know.
One of the things, Baden, that I'm sure many people listening to will have personal experience of is those families who've been bereaved, and just the whole discussion around funerals and not having that grieving process, not having even close family being able to attend.
Yeah.
How difficult has that been?
Very, very tough. And really, all along we were saying to people, look, at some point in the future we'll have a gathering, and we will, and that's important. But actually, Irish people do grieving and ritual really well. They gather around, they come to the house, they have the wake, and they have the time in the graveyard after, and they have the, even the procession, shaking hands at the front of the church or the chapel. You know, these things are really important because in the moment you capture that sense of loss among all of us.
I know, and I've heard people say, Baden, you know, it feels like it almost hasn't happened because there wasn't that process of grief.
That's going to be very, very tough for people to process because grief is better met early. If we meet it late, it usually comes with baggage and a lot of extra complications. So, you know, I really do... I won't say I'm worried because I think as community and as church, we will gather and we will rally. And we've done remembering services throughout the year and we've another little initiative going to start on Passion Sunday up to Easter for people to bring prayers or remember loved ones and put them on our cross, the Celtic cross in front of the church. And We'll move them in every night so that they're not damaged by the weather, and we'll bring them up on Good Friday to the front of the church on a different cross. And, you know, just really that praying tree, that sense of, you know what, God understands that so much of what we're going through. So he does. He really is with us. It's so different. It's so awful. And I've seen families just bewildered on the day, just saying, is this it? You know, is there nothing else we can do that can capture this person's life? Because, you know, normally within our services, we try to move from grief towards thanksgiving. But for some, it's still hanging there in the grief. You know, it's still kind of held back from its full expression. And that's going to be difficult. We know for a fact, and it's already happening, that mental health across the board is going to be a major issue for people. And I would really just encourage everybody to take that on board, process, think about these things. Don't be afraid to ask for help, to go talk to somebody, obviously online sometimes or phone. But, you know, there are so many supports within churches and agencies that are just really phenomenally important to us at this time.
Yeah, and to reach out for help, as you say. Yeah. A texter has gotten in touch. Jeff is saying, I agree, it's so sad that community worship is closed, but it's more important to recognise the church is not the building, it's you and me. This is the forum where God wants relationship all day, every day, not for an hour on Sunday morning. That's obviously something Jeff has learned from this experience of church closures. Baden, what have you learned?
It's a hugely important point because, you know, we knew immediately the walls and the roof are important in their living history, but really the church has moved. It's so much more than that. The word itself, ecclesia, means gathering. It means people. It means community. So no, absolutely. And I think that has actually shaken some people, but it's actually been a good thing for most people because, you know, that sense of being able to still be at home but still be part, have the Zoom coffee after the service, you know, all of that sense, that continual presence of prayer that Jeff is talking about is huge because we need it. You know, we're not, God is not distant in this. God is right with us and holding us and cherishing us and teaching us even through these things that are going on at the moment, you know.
Well, finally, Baden, what would you say to people who are, you know, just they're feeling very disconnected from their church community and they're feeling down about it, and there is all the positives that we can talk about in the different connections, but still that longing is there, and it's kind of the not knowing when. What would your advice to those people be?
Yeah, I think I'd say maybe two or three things on that. First of all, we don't know what the future holds, but we know who holds the future. Now, it's a cliche, but the cliche has depth and truth in it. So even if, as we probably realistically must expect, that this time next year we will have emerged or be emerging in a more significant way, even if that is the case, that's not something to lose heart about. Because sometimes what's happening to us now is teaching us that the things we had put our security on and even our identity on were shaky foundations, and that there's really an opportunity here for people to know the presence of God in their daily lives. That doesn't make it all happy ever after and roses in the garden. It means that we can actually search for God within our 5K. I see so many people getting into the freezing water. I think they need psychiatric help. But, you know, the swimming that's been happening, the people walking, 200,000 extra people on Bay Seafront last year. Those movements and those connections and those getting out is important for our prayer life as well. There is hope in all of this. And I just want to give one little example of hope. Just as the lockdown was beginning last year, my son happened to be playing the organ in the church just before the service, and I went out just to get a breather. I wasn't comfortable with this online stuff yet, you know. And there was a lady I know very well sitting outside listening. And we got talking, and she was telling me that her granddaughter was newborn and very, very ill and really wasn't maybe expected to survive, and prayed with her. And we started praying Sunday by Sunday, and hundreds and even thousands of people have been praying. That little baby had her first birthday last week, and that is just miraculous. Wow. What that child was facing into and came through. Now, not every story is like this, and not every experience is like this, but they are realities that give us hope, that remind us that we are not alone in this. We have each other, church, community, ecclesia, but we have God, God with us, a God who would surrender all his majesty and power, and not just be born in a feeding trough, but actually, you know, be actually executed on a wooden cross on a tree, and just who would go through all of that for love of us. That's the thing I think that gets me up every morning and keeps me going.
I hope it'll
help others too.
Yeah, I think it will, babe. And thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Spirit.
The charity Mary's Meals feeds over 1.5 million of the world's poorest children every day when they attend school. And for so many of those children, this food they receive, having a full belly, it's their only daily meal, but it's what helps them to learn and in so many cases to thrive. Now, alongside their feeding programs, Mary's Meals also run emergency relief work. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, because Mary's Meals are currently running an emergency response appeal to support their partners in Ethiopia. Have you heard much about the current situation in Ethiopia? There's been very little discussion on it here in Ireland, but I know our next guest will be able to tell us a little bit more about the current situation. It's great to have with us on the line the founder of Mary's Meals, Magnus McFarlane Byrne. Magnus, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
No, good morning. Great to join you again.
So tell us about what the current situation in Ethiopia is.
Well, it's a really painful one. Back in November last year, conflict erupted in Tigray, in the north of the country. There's long been tension between that part of the country and the central government, and that exploded into violence and conflict ever since. And you know, you mentioned there in your introduction, you know, that maybe people haven't heard much about this situation. And I think one of the reasons for that is that most of it has played out behind an almost complete communications blackout. No access to internet, no access to telephone communications for most of the people of Tigray during this time. And only very limited access for aid organizations. It so happened that we've been working in Tigray for many years. Our school feeding program has been operating there for many years. So we were feeding about 24,000 children there before this conflict.
And were you able to continue that, Magnus, or what happened with that particular element of the program?
Well, all the schools have closed down right now. There's been enormous disruption. Probably at least 2 million people have been displaced. Tigray only has a population of about 6 million. So about 2 million of them have fled their homes. The UN estimate that about 4.5 million people are in need of emergency aid. So it's been catastrophic. So no, our normal school feeding program has been adapted to become an emergency response. So we've got these amazing trusted partners there who are nuns, who I can't name for their own safety and security reasons, but we continue to work through them. And many of the schools, in fact, have become temporary centres for displaced people. They've become homes for people who've got nowhere else left to live. And amongst the many displaced people pouring into the city are unaccompanied children who've lost their parents. And so it's just this appalling situation where there is a desperate need for emergency help.
And just how dangerous it is, a situation, Magnus, as you've touched on there, for the few who are on the ground, as you mentioned, these religious sisters who are trying their best to assist these people. How then are we able to get help to those who are on the ground, and how are we able to try and support what they're doing when essentially it's you're trying to protect them and their identities and even just the difficulty of trying to get aid into the area at the time? How's it all working?
Yeah, no, and thank God for those sisters, because if it wasn't for them and their incredible courage, we wouldn't be able to do anything. You know, so they are still there, as they have been all these years, and through them we are able to help, thank God. But even the sisters themselves are suffering so much personally. There's no one who hasn't been affected in horrible ways by this conflict there. The main sister there, who's a good friend of mine, I'm talking to her, you know, at least once a week at the moment. She just messaged me before this call, in fact. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago I phoned her, and she just had news that 13 members of her own family had been killed. And that's just what everyone's experiencing there. So those sisters are both dealing with their own trauma and loss, and trying to care for these thousands of people who are streaming into the city, and they are able to do something really effective right now. So we are funding them to buy food. So there is a certain amount of food available locally to buy, and we're currently feeding 11,000 of those displaced people who are mainly living in these schools in the city. So that's our current focus. And over and over again, the sisters are just telling us, you know, that as well as the importance of that, of those material things, the food and the clothing and the blankets we're providing, it's just that knowledge that they haven't been forgotten about, because they feel so isolated, so forgotten by the world in this situation, you know. So we've been doing things like, a couple of months ago, we organized a global rosary for peace in Tigray, and the sisters were able to join us on a call with people from lots of different countries in the Mary's Meals family. And just that sense of not being forgotten, of that sense of solidarity and being loved, is a really important thing through
really
this
powerful.
For us and for them.
Yeah, it sounds like, Magnus, in terms of just your connection on the ground with the sisters, and thank God you've been able to feed a certain number of people. Presumably the need is much greater than that. What do you need people that are listening to be able to do to try and to grow the number that you're able to help on the ground there in Tigray?
Well, you know, we can do so much more, and the need is so much greater. And we have had an incredible response globally to this appeal for help, and actually especially in Ireland. So I was intrigued when you mentioned that maybe many people in Ireland haven't heard so much about this situation, because it's been staggering how generous people in Ireland have already been. And a really wonderful thing happened. I was talking to sister in Tigray a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about this theme of not being forgotten, and she said, we were watching the local television station the other day there in a public place, and there were crowds of people around the screens for the news. And she said there was an announcement that Mary's Meals in Ireland had launched an appeal for the people of Tigray, and she said this enormous roar went up from everyone who was watching about this idea that people in Ireland were not forgetting them, and so just that, you know, the need is acute. People are really, really scared about starvation. There are reports already of people starving to death in Tigray, and so this is life and death stuff, and we are able to reach not just those 11,000 people currently, but many more if people support this appeal.
And finally, Magnus, I just wanted to ask you, just in general, just thinking of the work that Mary's Meals does and what we're in the midst of at the moment in a pandemic, and of course you're working in many countries where the healthcare system, you know, could be thousands of miles, where there's only a few doctors that people can access. How has it affected you being able to help people during the pandemic?
Well, generally, thank God, we have been able to keep going with it, with providing children with meals every day. That's our promise to them, and it's a very dear promise to us. So even when schools have had to close for public health reasons across the world, we've been able to keep providing rations at home, parents coming to the stores at our schools and taking those meals at home. So that's wonderful. We've been able to keep doing that. But what we see, and more clearly even in recent weeks, is just the terrible impact that this global pandemic is having on the very poorest communities in the world. You know, where poverty is becoming even more acute, where there's even more hunger. You know, so we just see the need for this work is greater than ever, and we're just so grateful and moved by all those supporters around the world who aren't forgetting, you know, who might have an excuse to in this situation where we're all facing so much uncertainty and new challenges, you know, that so many people are just not forgetting that promise to the poorest in the world, and that's really why we can keep going.
Magnus, thank you so much for the work that you are doing with Mary's Meals, and thank you for joining us on the programme today. That was Magnus McFarlane Barr, the founder of Mary's Meals. If you want to support the current appeal for the crisis in Ethiopia, you can get all the details on their website, which is marysmeals.ie.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.